All right, Investor Plus is officially live, and it's everything you've been waiting for.
We're talking AI power networking to connect you with other investors who are serious about building their portfolio, not just dreaming about it.
You'll get access to Market Master Her, our step-by-step ebook that'll help you master any market, and an on-demand real estate fundamentals course that'll help you build your confidence. And nationwide chapter access, exclusive discounts worth over $6,000, and a 21-day meditation guide because, hey, balance is key. I am not ready yet. What if I screw this up? I just need one more course. Sound familiar? Perfectionism keeps too many women stuck, overthinking, delaying action, and playing small. Today, I'm excited to sit down with Dr. Robin Buckley to break down how to drop perfectionism, shift your mindset, and finally take action. We're covering a simple language shift that rewires your brain, how to stop underselling yourself, and a daily habit you can teach your kids to break the cycle of perfectionism for good. You cannot miss today's episode. Welcome to the Investor Podcast. I'm Liz Faircloth.
And I am your co-host, Andressa Gadelli.
So for a long time, I used to use perfectionism as a badge of honor. And it showed others that I had a high standard and I was willing to do whatever it took to get something done. That mentality has a cost. So for the women investors listening here who want to actually break through perfectionism, what is the first step?
Oh my goodness, Liz. First is, and you identified it really clearly, is acknowledging that perfectionism is not the gold star standard. It is actually the exact opposite. That when we set ourselves into that perfectionistic state, we are trying to achieve an ideal that isn't manageable. It's not achievable because the bar keeps moving. I'm sure you experienced it. I've experienced it. Every woman I think I know has experienced it, where this is your level of perfection, and then it gets moved up and up and up. So that really is the first step. And once we can acknowledge that this is a challenge or an obstacle to overcome, that's when we can start implementing strategies to reduce the perfectionism and ideally to eliminate the perfectionism. And those are the strategies that help really retrain the brain.
Ooh, a lot to unpack here, because as the badge, right? The badge has been put on. Mm-hmm. I'm a recovering perfectionist, recovering a lot of different things I'm recovering. But where does this come from, especially with women? Because after creating a community of women, high achievers, investors, women who are taking control of their finances, this is a quality that I'm not going to say all women have, but certainly a lot of them do. So where does this come from? I know it's not unique to our real estate investor group, and I see this in women, quite honestly, of all walks of life. So where do you think this actually comes from?
Right. Well, I can answer that from two perspectives. So one is the societal perspective and one is the neuroscience perspective. So I'll start with the societal, that I think a lot of people have at least an understanding a little bit of it. So our society teaches women that we can have it all. And I am here to tell you, sadly, that is a lie. We cannot have it all at the same time. That's the key variable. We can certainly try to achieve all that we want in our life, but not simultaneously. And that's where the idea of perfectionism, that we can be the best significant other or spouse, we can be the best parent, whether it's to a four-legged child or a two-legged child, that we can also be this boss woman in business, that we can be the best friend, that we can care for our parent, that we can do all of this simultaneously. And it is exhausting. And we try and do our very best. And I think what I cringe at the most is when people are like, I give 110%. I'm like, that is not mathematically possible. All we have is 100%. We don't have over that. So you actually can't. Or they say, I give 100% every day to my job. I'm like, no, you don't. Because that means, well, I hope you don't, because that means you're not giving anything else to any other area of your life, including your self-care. So that societal perspective that women should be able to do it all puts an immense amount of pressure on women. And, you know, when we look around, and particularly, you know, social media contributes to that, you know, we see the comparison model that's out there, and all we see is the successes and the perfection. And somehow when we compare ourselves and we're not at that level, then somehow it's a reflection on our failure, which of course it isn't, because that isn't a true picture. So that's from a societal perspective.
Can I ask a question? I want to ask a question on the societal piece, and I'd love to talk about the neuro element of this. Yeah. I agree with you. Women do want it all. I mean, I think about myself, right? And every woman that's listening to this, or man, people want it all. They want the success in their, you know, financial freedom. They want to have this amazing relationship with their children. They want to be a steward of the community, right? We want these things. So wanting all of those things, I don't think it's going to change. I don't think I hear you saying that, right? So in other words, okay, I want to be my best version of myself in each area of my life. And what has to get kind of compromised? I don't want to say compromised, but what has to get shifted in the expectations? Is that the work to be done? Because I don't think the wanting to have it all is actually probably not going to shift, because I do want all those things. Simultaneously, I agree. But overall, my life, absolutely.
Embracing your wants is a very important part of achieving goals and really living the life that you want. So I completely agree with you. I'm not dissuading anyone from changing their wants. In fact, I usually try and help women embrace their wants and say clearly, I want this. Because again, society teaches us that women shouldn't, that we should put ourselves last, which is absolutely ridiculous. So it is that shift in expectation that yes, you can want everything. You can want to be your best version in all areas. And I look at it as a pie chart. Every day is a pie chart. And you've got 100% of your time, energy, focus, and drive in that pie chart. But the pieces of the pie change every day. So when my sister several months ago was going through a divorce, she had a good part of I would say 15 to 20% of my day was spent on calls with her and helping her and walking her through and worrying about her. So there were other areas of my life that had to adjust. It's like, it's this a dynamic flow. So sometimes my husband didn't get as much of me and my time when I was really engaging with my sister. My career, I really didn't want to let go of that. So I was hyper-focused on making sure I still addressed time for my clients and doing all the things that I wanted to do for my business. But it's going to change and it's going to evolve, sometimes daily, sometimes weekly, but each day can't be the same. And each day isn't going to be that you're putting 100% into all the areas of the pie. So you can absolutely be your best version of yourself and you will give 100% over time, but just not in one concentrated day, week, month.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. So I'm curious a little more about the neuro side of it, which I know you love talking about.
I am a neuroscience geek. So I'll try and keep it simple, but it's important to me that people know that when we talk about being type A or really focused and driven, that we attribute these to innate genetic parts of our personality. And that isn't true. That most of our personality is conditioned and we become it because we're reinforced for certain things. There's some factors of personality that are genetic, but very few. So with that said, that means you can change who you are and what you are when you're ready to change, when it benefits you. And part of it is understanding how your brain works. So the two parts of the brain that I'm just going to give a highlight to are the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex. The amygdala is our most primitive part of our brain. It is all about keeping us that survival instinct. It helps manage our emotions, both positive and dysfunctional emotions or difficult emotions. And its sole purpose, or one of its main purposes, is to make sure that we continue to exist. So when we were living in caves, it was good that our amygdala made us afraid of the dark because there were things that could kill us. It was good that our amygdala made us afraid of fire because it could hurt us. But nowadays, our amygdala continues to function that way. And there's not many life-threatening things. You know, when I get up on stage to do public speaking, my amygdala is creating the thoughts of, they're going to think you're a fraud. What if you mess up? What if, you know, you really bomb this? And it's trying to get me to not do something that is scary or unknown, but I don't need it to, because I'm not going to die on stage. The flip side is your prefrontal cortex. And that's the logical, objective, rational part of your brain, the part that functions off of data and information and facts. And that's what really, when we talk about specifically your audience, Liz, you know, that's the part of your brain you really want when you're making financial decisions and when truly any decision in your life, whether it's financial or not. But the challenge is these two parts of your brain don't function simultaneously. So when your amygdala is firing like a toddler running around on caffeine, it shuts down your prefrontal cortex. So now you're only functioning in that emotional space and not the strategic space. And thankfully, the opposite is true. When you can engage your prefrontal cortex, it quiets the amygdala. So then you're thinking more and more in terms of facts, data, and information. And that's where your strategic thinking and problem solving can really flourish.
I have so many questions to dive into, because now I'm curious about, there's a societal impact, right, of especially women learning about perfectionism. I do think there's a bit of a gender impact. I'll just say it that way. And then you have this layer of science. And so my question is, how does this play of the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex, especially has it been studied within women particularly, and how is that impacting perfectionism? Because I feel like so many women probably are in their prefrontal cortex, not to say too much, but it's actually they're overdoing it on the facts, the data, and then they're doing all this research on different deals, and then that deal's gone. What's enough to know, and then what's too much, and taking them too long in terms of that level of perfectionism. So how does this neuroscience piece really impact, especially from a female perspective?
So your first question about women in research.
Yeah.
That's a tricky slope anyway, because not a lot of research is based on women, that they do a lot of research and they generalize the results to women without actually including women in the sample, which is
interesting. Yeah, great point. Which is a whole other issue for another day, right?
Yeah, we have a whole other conversation. So the perfectionism comes from the amygdala, this idea that we have to be perfect, that we have to achieve this gold standard. It's all amygdala based. Now, what you're talking about, that overthinking, I would actually say comes also from the amygdala. And here's why. When we are over planning, over researching, going down the rabbit hole of looking at everything 10,000 times to see if we've caught every bit of information possible, that tends to be a coping strategy to mitigate the feeling of, I want to get this right. I want to get this perfect. I want to make the exact right decision. And so our compensation is to do that exhaustive research that sometimes is just too much and is unnecessary. You know, we question ourselves. Have we looked at everything? Have we looked at, I didn't look at that article. I didn't pull up that financial, you know, document. Instead of just saying, hey, I got enough. I got enough to make an educated decision, and that's where the prefrontal cortex comes in. When we say to ourselves, is this necessary or is this just a comfort, like a security blanket to make sure I've covered it all? You know, the idea behind progress over perfection is real. That at some point your research is enough. And if you miss something, then you'll learn from it. But it's probably not going to tank the whole deal because you missed one article or one bit of information, because you've already done enough research. So trying to put boundaries around that idea of perfectionism is making sure your goals are really well defined and your timelines are really well defined, and not pushing those boundaries out just in case you miss something. That just in case, that's your amygdala. And it's your opportunity to tell your prefrontal cortex, no, we've got enough data to move forward and progress. And if I need to do more research as we go, then I'll do it then, but not to get this going.
So many questions. And so it's so fascinating to me, because I'm familiar with the prefrontal cortex and the amygdala, but nowhere near what you're describing, and the delineation of one is moving you towards more perfectionism and one is actually going to help you. And that's the key, is like, what do you do to interrupt, right? And especially if someone's like, you know what? I am a bit of a perfectionist. I'm sure everyone listening to this is not like, I've never heard of this concept before of perfectionism, right? So, but the question is, how do we live with it, move past it, and also not be held back by it? So the question you're saying is, I like a lot, where women can stop themselves and saying, is this necessary? Or is this just a comfort? Or is this just a way of being that I need to move past? You know, and any other strategies, any other questions they can ask themselves to?
Yeah, there's one that I love, and I'll say it and I expect the same reaction that I usually get. So women, or people in general, can stop masturbating in order to reduce their perfectionism.
I love that. Yes, I do love it. I've never heard that term before. Say that again, please, Dr. Robin, say that again.
You need to stop, or it's important to stop masturbating, and clearly hearing what I'm saying, masturbating, because I would never advocate stopping doing the other thing. But masturbation is a psychological concept where we create guilt, pressure, and stress simply from the words we are using. And a lot of my clients sometimes are like, come on, Robin, they're just words. I'm like, but words are either tools or weapons to your brain, and you get to decide which they are. So masturbation is the idea of using some really key words: should, have to, need to, must. And one of my clients in England said ought should be on the word. I'm like, well, that's very fancy, and I don't hear that a lot in America, but sure, I'll add it to the list. These words spike our cortisol and our adrenaline, which are our stress hormones. And on average, the typical person uses these words either internally or externally upwards of 300 to 600 times a day.
Wow.
I mean, think about that, Liz. That's a lot.
Psychotic. That's psychotic. Yeah, I'm with you. Lots of spikes
of our cortisol and adrenaline, which does not allow us to function at our best, at our optimal levels. So in order to change it, there are three simple words and phrases to change those statements to: want, will, or get to. So instead of, for example, oh, I have to make a decision about this deal today. No, you don't. You don't have to do anything. There is nothing in your life you have to do. And I love when people challenge me. They're like, well, Robin, you have to eat. I'm like, no, you don't. But I'll die. I'm like, yep, that's your choice. You can die. That's your choice. Same about breathing. Same about anything. There's nothing we have to do. It's just that there's going to be a consequence or some other result if we don't do it. So I have to make a decision about a deal. No, you don't. Well, if I don't, I'll miss the deal. Yes. So do you want to make a decision about the deal? Will you make a decision about the deal? Do you get to? Those are power words, Liz. They are functional control words. They are the words that trigger our prefrontal cortex. The masturbation words are coming from the amygdala, and it ups our level of stress and pressure, which ups our level of perfectionism. I have to make a decision so that, you know, this happens. That's perfectionism. Instead of, I just want to, I want this to happen. So I'm going to go ahead and make this decision. That's where we kind of sit back and in our comfort, like, no, this is in my power. This is in my control. And when we as humans feel like we have functional control, not perfectionistic control, but functional control, that's where the sweet spot is for optimal functioning. That's what drops our perfectionism, because it isn't the masturbation words put us in a corner, back us and trap us into a corner. And that's what triggers the amygdala, because we're being challenged. So we're going to fight, flight, or freeze in those situations, which is all amygdala. It's the amygdala hijack of our brain. But want, will, and get to, those are fun. Now, I will say that people will tell me, well, Robin, I don't want to go to the gym. Like, I don't like exercising. I'm like,
oh, you're like, to be frank, I just don't want to do that.
Right. Absolutely. So my question is then, why do you go? Well, I want to be healthy. I want to be a role model to my kids. I want to reduce my chance of diabetes. Okay, then that's what you say. I will go to the gym because I want whatever that is. That's different than I have to go. I should go. Like, those don't feel good. So when we want, will, or get to, our perfectionism is gone because we're in control again.
Oh, I love that. I love the want, will, and get to. Looking to break into real estate, but you just don't know where to start? Meet PropStream, the all-in-one platform that helps you uncover hidden deals and find motivated sellers before anyone else. With over 160 million properties nationwide and AI-powered insights like foreclosure prediction and property condition scores, you'll spot off-market opportunities others miss. Need contact info? Automate your outreach with postcards, email campaigns, and personalized landing pages all in one place. Listen, finding motivated sellers, as we all know, is the first step. Knowing how to reach and convert them is what sets top investors apart. Start your 7-day free trial today and get 50 leads at trial.propstreampro.com/investher. That's trial.propstreampro.com/investher. The have to, so it's have to, should, what are the other words?
Have to, should, need to, must, and ought, if you're fancy.
Ought to, yeah, if you're fancy. Yeah, I you know, the words we use are always more powerful than we think.
Yeah,
absolutely. I've gotten to the point where I watch the words I'm saying and I'll say but a lot. Well, so-do-do-do-do, but I'm like, I got to change it to and then I'll stop and go and. So it's
and you don't have to, Liz. You just want to.
Yeah.
See, we say the words without even hearing them. So you just said, I have to change the but to an and. No, you don't, but you want to.
And it's catchy. That's true. I did just make the mistake you just talked about.
you don't even hear it. And that's why it's tricky, because we've been so indoctrinated into using those words since we were first understanding language. And people are like, you have to go pick up your toys. You need to go do your homework. We don't even hear them anymore. And yet they are sabotaging our optimal level of function and creating perfectionism. And we don't even know it.
One of the things I feel like this is inspiring me, because I literally want to do this like today, starting today, is I love audits. I'm on a cleanse right now. So I'm literally on day three. I'm watching everything I'm eating, and it's this whole kind of cleansing of the body. And because I'm mindful of what I'm putting in my body, that's how I'm able to have this cleanse experience. The same thing with what you're saying. And I love the idea of, I almost want to like take note of how many times I'm saying have to. I probably, the fact that I just said it live with you means that I must say it, I don't know, probably 300 to 600 times. So, but that kind of awareness is critical to moving past this. Mm-hmm. I really love that. I have more questions when it comes to perfectionism. I want to jump in, but I also want to mention to everyone that Dr. Robin is going to be one of our keynotes at InvestorCon coming up June 1st to 3rd. It's going to be in Orlando, Florida. If you have not gotten a ticket, I don't know what you're waiting for. We'll put more information in the show notes. But what I love about what you're going to be talking about there, in addition to what you're sharing here, is making your brain your ally. So I know you're going to go into a lot of depth of how to make the prefrontal cortex and amygdala and all the other elements of our brain actually work for us as we're really achieving our goals and moving past everything. So hope everyone can join us at InvestorCon. I'm so excited to hear more from you, Dr. Robin. Before we wrap though, I have a couple more questions. You know, a big one for women, and we see this happening a lot, is that negotiation. Women second guessing themselves in negotiation. And negotiation is happening all around us. And then women will say, well, I'm actually not negotiating as a real estate investor. And I'm like, hold on, you need to be negotiating as a real estate investor, whether it is on the buying of the property, whether it's with a lender, whether it's with your contractor, right? And knowing how to do that in a way that works for you. It's a journey for some people, and some people are great at it. If one skill I wish women would embrace more is the negotiation skill, because we leave money on the table all the time. I see them even doing that with fees they're due. I have a woman in our group, in our Strive community, and she was sharing about how much equity she was bringing to a project, a very large project. And she was bringing about 80% of the equity. The other partners were bringing 20%, yet she was getting 1/4 of the fee. And that's not a unique story. I'm sure we hear that all the time. And that just literally gets to my soul. And I'm on a mission to change that, because women actually deserve so much more than they're getting. But let's talk about that around, what is a mindset shift when women are second guessing themselves in negotiation, whether it's for themselves or actually for the contract they're putting in place with a contractor or a lender? What can they do around just whether it's their mindset or strategies so they can set themselves up for success and not second guess themselves?
One of the biggest strategies, Liz, and you'll probably hear it again in Orlando, because I can't get this through to women more than
common sense is not common practice, right, Dr. Yeah. Robin?
So part of it is, again, going back to the neuroscience, our prefrontal cortex sometimes doesn't have data quickly accessible to remind us how unbelievably amazing and capable we are. And in those situations where we negotiate down or don't negotiate at all, even though we want to, and even though we had plans to, is because we don't have that quick data. So our amygdala comes in and says, yeah, that's kind of bold to ask for that amount of money, or, oh my gosh, who do you think you are to be requesting that? So real easy strategy is to make sure your prefrontal cortex does have the facts and data. And that requires regular review, what I call a resume review. And it's a simple strategy that is often neglected by clients and by women I talk to about this, because we just forget to do these kind of things. But it's simple. Three steps. First, you create some kind of e-file or shoebox or binder, and you put artifacts of all the things you've done, really just that make you amazing. So it might be notes from clients or annual reviews, your diplomas or certificates, anything that really makes you remember that you're a badass. The second step is to make sure that you update that file at least monthly, if not weekly. So something, maybe not weekly might be challenging, but at least once a month, there is something that defines like, wow, it doesn't have to be that you ran the New York City Marathon, although if you did put that in, because that's amazing. It can be just these small pieces that it's like, you know, a colleague who said, wow, that was an awesome presentation. Nice job. That should be, it could be a part of your resume review. The third step is the one that people tend to stop doing, which is reviewing your me file. Or what I call it, a me file sometimes, resume review. So again, weekly or monthly, you sit down in a dedicated, uninterrupted time frame with your favorite drink, and you review your resume review. You review your me file, because that's how the data gets into your long-term memory. So that when you're sitting in a meeting, someone's like, how about, you know, we pay you 25% when you're doing 80% of the work. Instead of your amygdala saying, no, yeah, you don't really deserve more than that. Your prefrontal cortex does a quick, like, old-fashioned Rolodex of like, baloney, like, look at all these amazing things you've done. You deserve more than that. And you can step into that negotiation fully rather than listening to your amygdala saying, don't be too bold. Don't toot your own horn. Yeah, you better be tooting it loud based on all those amazing things you've done in your life.
Oh, I love this. A me file or a me shoebox. It's funny you say that, because the other day I keep a card on my desk, not on it, but inside like a drawer of my desk. And it's a card from one of our, a friend, a colleague. She works very closely in within the investor community. And it's just a beautiful note about how she sees me as a person, as a leader. And honestly, I read that probably at least once a week, and I need to, but this is inspiring me. And hopefully everyone listening is that that's sporadic. It's random. It's not consistent. And I love that you're saying to create this shoebox, because it is a shoebox. It's multiple things. It's not just one thing. And I think that's such a phenomenal idea. How often, you said once a month, should people review this?
At minimum once a month. Usually my suggestion is when you're going through a hard time or you're coming up to a big event, like a meeting, a big deal, I would recommend it be once a week so that the data is fresh. And this isn't skimming through it. That's why I said dedicated uninterrupted time where you could just sit and read it. And that's why it's also important to continue to put new things in, because if you don't, your brain's going to get bored and you're going to stop doing it because it's dull. So when you add in new information, it becomes an active and dynamic tool.
I really love that. And I think that's such a simple thing to do that would make such a tremendous impact. And it also, in terms of it impacting this level of, probably decreases the, you know it better than me, the perfectionism impact of the amygdala, I would imagine, because it's showing your successes. It's showing not just your successes, but your wins, your way of being, even birthday cards. I keep special birthday cards. I don't know if I'm the only one, but if someone writes something very sweet or special to me, I keep that card, but it's everywhere. I don't know where half these things are except for this one note in my desk, you know?
That's exactly it, Liz, that it reduces the perfectionism because you've already been successful. So now you get to keep doing the things that you're amazing at. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to recreate yourself. Just keep doing the amazing things and you're going to continue to be successful. So your standard is already established. You don't have to start advancing that to a point that is now absolutely unachievable.
And that kind of gets me to my last question. What if my children got this at the ages that they are? I have an 11-year-old, I have a 7-year-old. And wow. If they can create this habit,
no kidding,
as a child, I think they'd have a very different road than right. someone like me in my 40s, still navigating. Honestly, at times I know I have a very high self-worth. I love myself. There are moments that I do second guess myself. I'm not perfect in every situation. So have you seen an impact in you know, especially for, because this is inspiring me to think about my children. If I start to create a practice to do this, to teach them, is that a way you break the cycle with them in terms of perfectionism?
Yes. You teach them these strategies. You model these strategies. And I'll give you a real easy, quick one, Liz. One of my clients at the time that I was doing more clinical work, she was 17 years old, super anxious, super perfectionistic, taught her about masturbation. She said, and I said, you know, if you have people that can check you when you say those words, it works even better because you won't hear it originally when you're saying these words out loud. So she came back, I don't know, a few weeks later, and she came up with a strategy. So I'm sure most of your audience has heard of swear jars. You know, you swear, you put money in. Well, she created a masturbation jar for her family of four. It was her two parents, her brother, and herself.
I love one, that. Yeah.
Two jars. One jar was for money. So if anybody caught you saying a masturbation word, you had to put in a dollar. And the other jar was for whoever caught you could write their name on a piece of paper and put it in. So she actually had to grow. The jars were too small. She had to grow it. They did it for 1 month. And in a family of four, in 1 month, my client, who's really competitive, is very competitive. She won $750 in a family of four in 1 month. Now think about that. That is just what they heard out loud when they were home together. Never mind the internal thoughts. Never mind when kids were at school, parents were at work. $750 in 1 month. That's a lot. So that's a really, I've mentioned that to other clients and they've done it. And it's a fun way for everybody to be engaged, for everybody to learn the strategy and to change the culture in the house. So even when my kids would say, well, I have to go do my homework. I'm like, no, you don't. You don't have to do homework. And they would look at me like I had four heads. And one of my daughters was super. She's like, oh, good. I'm like, well, let's think about this.
Yeah,
I said,
yeah.
Well, why do you want to do your homework? And it was, well, I want to, you know, graduate high school, or I want to get into a good college, or I want to make sure I pass this class. Okay. So that's why you will go do your homework, because that's what you want. And it just changes it, because all of a sudden they're not being challenged or forced. And you're not telling them you have to go do it. You're saying, why will you go do it? Why do you want to go do it?
Oh, I love that. I'm getting a jar, two jars today. I really love this, because we want to teach, you know, so many of the women in our community are living different lives, right? They want a different experience. So they create a legacy, not just financial legacy, but a legacy that everyone can really be proud of and live life on their own terms. The biggest thing so many women want is to give those skills to their children. Right. And this is one of them, because it just continues if you don't break the cycle. It's like about breaking the cycle. I seriously love this. And I want to hear all the women that are listening to this in our Facebook community. I want to see pictures of your masturbation jars.
Me too.
No, I'm serious. I love that. I'm going to do it with my family. My 11-year-old and 7-year-old will have a great time. They're like, what word did you just say? I don't know if they even know the other one, but yet. So, but all good. I this has been amazing, Dr. Robin. I'm so excited to listen to you and learn from you and all the women at InvestorCon. So everyone, you got to get your ticket at the very minimum just to see Dr. Robin talk further about how we can make our brains are actual ally and not go against us. So where can everyone learn more about you? You have a book coming up. So please share how everyone can get connected to you and learn more about all the amazing things you're doing.
Thanks. So certainly on LinkedIn and Instagram are easy ways. It's just Dr. Robin Buckley, all one word, and DR abbreviated. And then as Liz mentioned, my book, Marriage Incorporated, is going to be coming out in 2025. And if it's available by the time our event in June happens in Orlando, then I'd be happy to give discounts for women who want to purchase it. So
awesome. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Robin.
It was really a pleasure.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to receive updates on our next interviews, go to our website, therealestateinvestor.com. There, you can subscribe to our show, become part of our investor community, and get updates on upcoming episodes.
If you like our show, please share with other women who would benefit. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, we encourage you to take one action as a result of today's show and put it into motion so you can live both a financially free and balanced life. Thanks for spending time with us. Ciao.